Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavat Sandarbha, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 2, Bhagavan's medium-sized form is omnipotent and all-pervasive. Anucheda 36, page 22. By your mercy you showed the whole universe within your body, giving visual proof. That is a fact. The previous meaning is repeated in order to remove other ideas about the Lord, while emphasizing the truth of the incident. Yasya Kukshav idam sarvam satmam bhati yata tata tat vayapiha tat sarvam kim idam mayaya vina. Just as this universe, including you, was exhibited within your abdomen, so it is now manifested here externally within you. How could such things happen unless arranged by your maya? Uddhriti, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Since the external universe and that within the Lord's belly are exactly the same, the one within the belly must be one created by the illusion of the Lord. Brahma says, just as the universe idam within your belly which became visible, the external universe also remained visible while you showed the universal form to your mother. Was the universe exhibited within your belly a reflection of the external universe? How can that be? The universe was there along with you. Can a reflection in a mirror be seen in a mirror? An illusory external universe is visible within your belly, as the universe visible within your belly contained you. So the external universe also contained you. See, so what's happening is that you're seeing Krishna is there, and he's showing the full universes within his belly, right? So then the question comes is because he has this medium-sized form, how can you get the whole universes within his belly? But the point is even we see it externally, and then so yes, this is the way it is. The point is Krishna being all-pervasive, it's still within his belly. You know, it's just a matter of whether we're looking at all the universes in his belly from within his belly or out, seemingly outside of his belly. That's why it says it seems that's that, because it's the same position. Right? Everything's always within Krishna. It's just a matter of which layer you're looking at. You know, it's just like you have those Russian dolls. You know, but they're all inside the Russian doll. It's not that, oh, this one's not, you know. Does that make sense?
The jiva are in the belly of Krishna.
Yeah, everything's in Krishna. So therefore, then there's the vision of your externally seeing it, or in this case, then Mother Jashoda seeing it internally. But it's the same thing, because we will doubt this because of the being conditioned by time and space. Yes. And so therefore everything has to fit within time and space. But if you're dealing with that which is beyond the source of time and space, therefore beyond time and space, what's the problem? Yes. If you're talking about someone's unlimited, then what's the problem if also they have their medium-sized form? And the best part is the medium-sized form is the source of that unlimitedness, because that medium-sized form is unlimited. See, so these inconceivable difficulties come up because we're conditioned by time and space. We're saying it has to work in a particular way, right, for it to make sense to us, because we're only working within the context of what we see. It's like the Professor Frog, right? He has a well. So he will judge everything by his well. You know, the other one is talking about the ocean. Okay, so is it, you know, it's really big. So is it like 10 times bigger than my well, or 100 times, or 1,000 times? But it's always in context of the well. So that's the difficulty, is that these kind of things are beyond our context, because we don't have a context of unlimited.
It's interesting, you can illustrate like higher dimensions, like four-dimensional space and five-dimensional space. You can illustrate it and show that distance becomes a different thing. Like two points that in three-dimensional space would be very far from each other would be quite close in four-dimensional space.
Mm-hmm.
So you can illustrate it. It's just that our mind is so used to working with material space
mm-hmm.
in three dimensions that mm-hmm. we just can't let it go.
Yes. But even there, they have that. It takes them some time to get adjusted to these things.
Yes.
But even there, as they're dealing with all these different things of space, I think they're up to what, like 9 or 10
11.
Now? 11
yeah.
now. Okay, 11. They've moved on from Sheldon, huh?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's just as they go, they'll just see there's unlimited of them.
And now they've reached the point where you can't measure it anymore. It just disappears into the Brahma.
Yeah, because that's what you're dealing with, is Brahman.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's an experience of Brahman, but you can't intellectualize Brahman. That's the whole point, is that so that feeling that you'll live forever, this moment is so great, it's forever, and this and that, and you know, all these different things. That's because you're touching Brahman, you're experiencing Brahman, but you can't intellectual the intellect, it being a limited, element, then how is it going to understand unlimited?
It's the Anuman serving the Prajaksha rather than the Shakta. You can say like that.
Yes, because they're starting with their senses. Therefore, the Anuman is just to, so they can see what is there. They take what they see. Then they use Anuman, rather than take what they hear from authority, from Shastra, and then apply Anuman. Right? Because then you apply it to Pratyaksha, then you're seeing based on the scriptures. That's Shastra Chaksha. So that's the difficulty, is that their approach is inductive, so it's backwards. They actually can't understand. So no one except Vaishnavas can understand, because the Lord, being beyond all this, He's not controlled by us. Not that God's controlled by our intellect. You know? It's not like some, some Jedi, you know, kind of thing where they control God or something. Yeah. The point is beyond. He's the source of all these things. So that's what makes Him different. That's what makes Him God. Everything else, we're used to dealing with energies. But even then, we don't understand that well. You know, it's just within the context of what we're used to. So, yeah. Because there was not even a trace of difference between the two universes, the universe within your belly, Idam, could not exist without the work of Maya. Taking your mother's realization in mind is proof. I conclude that I exist within you by your Yogamaya potency, and therefore I pray, please forgive me for offenses, as a mother forgives her child who kicks her while he is within the womb. So this is still Brahma speaking, no? Yeah. So he's pointing out that it's Yogamaya that we're seeing, because the Mahamaya means we'll see the universe within the context of what we understand, right? Yogamaya, then you're seeing it in the context of the Lord. Like that. But the existence of the energies and all that, and where they're situated, that's all taken care of by the Sri Shakti, right? The internal potency. So it's just a matter of us appreciating its connection with the Lord. Because the point of seeing everything connected with the Lord, that's the position we're trying to get to. Right? And then being able to function within that, within the interaction of the pastimes of the Lord. Does that make sense? Because the Lord, being transcendental, He's functioning in His pastimes with the devotees beyond the material creation. So that situation that's in, that's one thing. And then the taste that they're getting, then that's beyond that. Right? Means that something is spiritual, that's the existence of something. Right? Does that make sense? But then what do you do in that spiritual position? Right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, you can walk into a very nice place and for a few moments appreciate the place, how nice it is and this and whatever is the aspect of it. But then, after a few moments, you have to do something in that space. Otherwise, how long can you just go on going, wow, this is nice? Does that make sense? There's a limit there. So the point is the Lord and his associates, they're always interacting on this transcendental platform. And the spiritual is that platform that's beyond the material. Right? So, see, if I'm taking something, let's take for example, Nityananda Prabhu goes into a pub. What is he doing in the pub?
Preaching.
Preaching. What are other people doing in the pub?
Other things.
Yes, other things. Not preaching. Needing to be preached to. Yes. So the whole point is why? Because we take the context of the pub. So those who understand the pub is just a place where people are engaged in sinful activities. Therefore, if Nityananda goes in there, they think he's engaged in sinful activities. So that's why the warning, don't think that that's what it is. Seeing that he's picking up, if he picks up Jagai Madai, then, they are like pub personified. pub small time.
Top of the pubs.
Huh?
Top of the pubs.
Yes. Yeah. It's like you get pub essence, and then if you look inside carefully, you see Jagai Madai. Yeah. So that's the point, is that when we're seeing according to material vision, right? Because material vision means we see everything in context of the senses for sense gratification. Therefore, when we hear about the Lord's pastimes, we're going to see them in the same context. Does that make sense? So that's the weakness. That's why one has to go beyond, one has to get to the spiritual platform, the spiritual understanding. Right? Not that the spiritual itself is the important position. It's the activities that go on in that spiritual position that are important. Does that make sense? Like that. But by understanding that, then you appreciate what's beyond the material. So you see it in a different context. Because otherwise, we'll have a tendency to look at it with from our own context. So that's the difficulties. We're taking from our pratyaksha and then our anuman. But that won't get you to shabda. By pratyaksha and anuman, that won't give you shabda. But shabda and then anuman, it will give you pratyaksha.
And it will give you how they're connected.
Yes, it'll show you how it's all connected. So it's one thing you're seeing without illusion. So that's the jnana shakti. But otherwise, if you start from the pratyaksha, just from your senses and how you view, when you try to extend that through the anuman, through the inference, then the difficulty is you'll still stay within in the ignorant shakti. You won't get beyond it. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point here, is that if we're using our own context, then we'll say something of medium size can't be unlimited. Because we're working from our own context. Right? So that's the whole point. Does that make sense? Yeah, you want more popcorn? You order the extra large.
We'll have the unlimited cheese.
The unlimited, yes. Like that. You just get a small one that you can eat unlimited popcorn out of. Now that would
like
be
Arjuna's quiver.
Huh?
It's like Arjuna's quiver.
Yeah, now that would be
inexhaustible medium.
The inexhaustible popcorn, how you say, what do they call that? Tub. Or bucket. Or whatever it is, yeah. Right? Everywhere else you put it in a bowl. America, you put it in a bucket. Right? Bowls aren't big enough. Just, bowls.
Just start doing a barrel.
Barrel of popcorn.
You need a barrel of popcorn.
Yeah, and it comes with one of those little things with the wheels on it and the handles. You can wheel it in and then put it down. And then.
There you go, sir.
Yes. Yeah.
Does this come with free refills?
Like
might as well do it the same thing with the Mori.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Maharaj, when you say that time and space doesn't apply to the spiritual world and to the devotees in the spiritual world, so when you say about this particular aspect of the Lord being medium-sized and all-pervading, let me say that just because the aspect of space doesn't exist, therefore he can be at the same time this as well as that.
But then, is trying to explain that from the inductive platform, then from that, then you end up that Krishna's dependent on there being no time and space. Therefore, he can be unlimited. The point is he's the source of time and space. That's why he's unlimited. Yeah? We have to remember to see it the other way around. Okay.
Mark? The point of faith.
Faith?
Yeah. For example, we see, when we hear that, we believe in it.
Yes.
And some people hear that, and they don't.
Yes, that's why you see the preachers generally always asking, do you believe? Yes. that's the whole point, because there may be a doubt. Yes.
So
there's nothing you can do about it other than put people in contact with the chit potency.
Because sometimes devotees, they try to explain from this angle, from that angle, from this angle.
Yes, you can, as long as it's from the various angles from the chit potency. But from the mundane, you can never understand it. You know, it's just like, how successful was it explaining to Professor Frog? That's the whole point, because he's working on a limited context. You can't explain to him unlimited. So that's the whole point, is that why even try? You know, it's like this, So we have to be very, very careful, is that Krishna is who he is. And being everything, being the source of everything, being the controller of everything. Therefore, you can explain everything in relation to him. And everything else, you can deal with it in its relative terms and in connection with each other, but it won't give you an understanding of the spiritual. It won't even give you a complete understanding of the material. You only actually understand material when you understand the spiritual. Because if you understand the person, you understand the reflection in the mirror. But saying that within the reflection of the mirror, I'm going to explain how it works so that then you get a realization of the person, it won't happen. That's the difficulty, is that we're, you know, it's like you have the multiple dimension. You ever seen sometimes when you have a main mirror and then two mirrors at 45 degree angles on each side? If you look just right, you can kind of see your reflection going off in the distance. So that's what the physicists are working with. You know, they're just seeing it reflected off itself. So they're taking it that it's something else, something else, something else. Because you see in those reflections, they get smaller and smaller and smaller. The distance between them is closer. So they're saying it's always like this. All it is they're seeing more reflections of reflections. You know, because if you get it right, it will reflect. And then, unfortunately, then they're thinking, oh, there's so many dimensions like that. But they don't really understand. They don't really have a clear definition of these definitions. Because the problem is the definitions of dimensions are actually perspectives, you know, of perception. And then perception is then individual. And therefore it's subjective. And they're trying like anything to try to show that they're not being subjective at all. You know, it's like this just, it's like, you know, what do you call it? You know, somebody knocks on the door of the pujari room and a voice from inside goes, I'm not eating bananas. You know, it's like that. So that's the scientist. You know, they're working so hard to say is we're just being objective. So then so objective means we could see it from any angle, but unless we see it from your angle, we're not being objective. So wouldn't that by definition be subjective? You know, by their definition. But so that's the difficulty, is that you can't understand the actual person from all those reflections in the mirror. Even if you do all of them and get out your math and this and that and analyze and, you know, get out your thing and check the colors and do whatever you want that scientifically, it still won't explain the person and why they're standing there in front of that mirror. Like that. Because that they can't explain. Yes?
Well, that's why in the context that having the culture and the lifestyle, which is conducive to understanding,
yes,
is always very important.
Yes. Because that's the lifestyle that they live on the transcendental platform. We may like it or not, but, you know, varnashram and religion and all these activities, all the mechanics of, you know, how cooking, all the arts, everything, whatever is there, it's from the spiritual world. So when we say it's a reflection, that's all we have in here. Like that. So, therefore, the lifestyle that's there is conducive for the consciousness of being there. Why? Because then it's not based on our upadis. It's based on the transcendental position of the spiritual world, the Lord and His associates. We may approach it and situate ourselves within that context of religion by our own upadis. But we're not starting with our upadis, so it's a descending process. So it's descending and then we fit into it. Well, if we start from more Westerners, then you're starting with an upadi, and then on this upadi it's going to get you to the spiritual world. I mean, the Tower of Babel didn't even get them to heaven, let alone the spiritual world. Right? Like that. You know, so that's the whole point, is it's not getting anybody anywhere. So the whole point is why wouldn't we want to use that? It's the only thing that is universal. Otherwise then we have to choose a particular country, and within a country, a particular area within the country, and within that area of the country, a specific space within that country, and then say that's universal. But just by definition, that's not universal. Universal means what is coming from the universal. Is that make sense? Yeah.
Like, for example...
But if it's coming from Pixar, you can't say it's universal. Right.
Like, whenever we go out, that many people ask, what do you mix in your food? It always... Are you mixing some drugs, this, that... It always gives us that extra faith that, yes, prasadam is completely different, because even a materialist who is so gross, he understands the potency of it, but...
Yeah, but they want to know what it... Yeah, because they've even said, that there's been allegations, we put stuff in the food and stuff like that. It's always it's come up with these.
We always ask them, you know, how much does it cost? Such, you know, to put something that expensive inside the food and we give it for free.
Free, yeah.
Yeah,
but then, yes, that's a very good approach, interesting
that's
approach. But then you also have the thing is that, you know, then that means then, at least if nothing else, they should respect us for being so, one generous, of course, but also from the point of being so materially together and wealthy that we have the money and facilities to do that.
Yeah, first we ask them for donation, and then that's what they think, and then, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Your donation doesn't pay for that anyway.
Yeah.
So we actually get it from another planet.
Different shop. Different shop.
Yes. The one, what is it? The one with the old Chinese guy that's there, and then you say the right word, and then they open a door, and it goes in, you know, into this huge, some little dinky shop. Yeah. So the important is that we're limiting ourselves in our analyzation by time and space, by our own subjective position. And then we're claiming they're being objectively scientists and we're the sentimentalists. You know, you just have faith. But the point is they have faith in science. They have faith in the bus that stops in front of that bus stand that says the name of the place that they want to go to on it is actually going there.
But it's worse than that, because they, like we were talking about recently, they're using axioms that haven't been established. At least the bus usually comes, so there's something to have faith in. But modern science is like they just have these axioms, these presuppositions that are just made up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it takes them sometimes decades to get to them. Yes.
And to pull mathematics too far into making their interpretations valid, then that they, actually the math itself is becomes useless now.
Mm.
Math was good before.
Yeah. But it had been once. I don't know what it was, but I remember in calculus, the teacher one day went up to the board and showed how the mathematical system that we use actually is not valid. He just showed how you manipulate the numbers and it doesn't actually work out the way it's supposed to be. So it says that we have premises that everybody's accepting, so therefore we'll work according to that. And that's why we'll say it works. You know, because, I mean, the whole calculus is all on theorems, right? Just means you haven't disproved it.
Yes. Even on arithmetic, one South Indian mathematician, he showed 2 equal to 3.
Yeah, that's, I mean, they'll do stuff like that. They can show all these things. And we're showing 1 plus 1 is 1, 1 minus 1 is 1. Like that, you know.
Within maths, they have a concept of imaginary number I is equal to root of minus 1. And the entire theory, all the calculations are based on that, and just assumption, which is no basis.
Yes, yes. Yes, so exactly, that's the thing. They're just accepting, and then, so they have faith in that, and that's where they're putting their faith. And then they'll say, if you're not having faith in that, then you're just, you know, just a sentimentalist. So that's the difficulty, is that the living entity is a living entity. It doesn't matter what species they're in, whatever it is, what position, they're still a living entity. And they still, you know, the values, being Satchitananda, is still their values. They value knowledge, they value existence, they value relationships, they value endeavors that give results that are supposed to make you happy. And all that should go on eternally.
They have so much faith in logic, and when we explain them the method of deduction via logic, that doesn't make sense to them. Why? And it should actually make sense to them if they have that much.
No, but the point is they don't. There's a motive behind something, so if there's a motive, then they'll never understand. If you have a motive for doing something, you'll only see it in the context of that motive. So therefore, no matter how you explain it that it's wrong, it won't be wrong. You know, like some guy comes up with some business plan, everybody says it won't work. Doesn't matter how many angles you explain it from. He'll think, no, you guys are just, you know, saying this because you're envious or jealous, or I came up with a better plan than you. Or so it's until he applies it and then it doesn't work, then only. So because they have this faith, and that's all they have, because they're, you know, that materialistic element, that even if it doesn't work, they just come up with a new plan.
That's basically every Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
It's a guy against the system, and everyone's telling him he can't do it, and it's wrong.
Yeah.
And he does it anyway, just because he wants to.
Yes.
Yeah, no, but that's
that, well, that's
what we want.
But
right?
That's the point. That's why it's Hollywood.
Yeah.
He always wins. You know,
that's what people will pay to see.
Yeah, yeah, because then it gives them inspiration that I could also do like that. You know, like that. Like, I can't even walk properly, but someone eats my fish, my pet fish, and now I'm, a world-class martial artist.
Ninja.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, how does that happen? You know, it's like... yeah. Yeah.
Cheat poses.
Yes.
My own.
Yes, or achit poses, yes. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is here's this context of how we're viewing. We have to shift to looking at things from a deductive method, that it's coming from Krishna. In other words, it's Shabda. Shabda explains it. That's how it is. And if we accept that, Krishna reveals. Because unless you understand the position, that spiritual position, but how do you understand spiritual? Unless you, it's beyond material, that means you have to give up material to understand it. If I have some concepts that I'm holding on to, I can't understand concepts that are beyond that concept. You know, that's the whole point. So you have to give up that concept. In other words, the desire for material Einstein. The desire for material happiness, material sense enjoyment, until I give that up, how will I actually understand spiritual? Right? So for all devotees, there is some degree that they're giving it up. Right? So that's why that's why we're understanding to the degree of our surrender. And so as we surrender more, we understand more. It's not because we surrendered it's there, it's because surrendering is Krishna's process. And if you follow his process, then he reciprocates. Then we can appreciate. So that's why you see it's constantly said about giving up material sense, desire for material sense gratification. Doesn't mean the senses aren't engaged, as will generally be thought, right? Because from our context, is you're either engaging the senses in sense gratification, or you're not engaging the senses at all, right? So it's either karma or jnana. But bhakti means you're engaging it not for yourself, but for Krishna. So you see, it's the perfect blend. It's the origin of the concepts of karma and jnana. If I take the engagement of the senses and the happiness I get from that, that's called karma. If I take the detachment and the happiness I get from that, that's called jnana. But in bhakti, the two run together. You know, in other words, bhakti is the source of these. It's not that karma and jnana make up bhakti. Bhakti is the source of karma and jnana. Right? It's just that in the spiritual world, its origin is bhakti, but in the reflection, it's karma and jnana.
The neophyte devotee has this tendency to look at it from prajaksha.
Yes, because that's what we're used to. We're conditioned. That's why we say conditioned. In a conditioned state, we're always going to look from that. You know, and then slowly, it may be a little more. We might be able to accommodate, you know, a little bit more. So let's say someone is more new agey. So in the beginning, it's easier for them to accept all these things. But then the problem is that they might remain attached to their new age position. So then they can't go beyond that, which may be more subtle, you know, than a gross perspective. But it's still not transcendental. So that's why all ideas of how we're going to be happy in the material world, we just have to give that up. That idea that we'll be happy here. You can't be happy here. It's like if, let's say I have some food and it's, you know, just how it looks, the colors, the portions, the shape, everything is perfect. Right? But somehow or another, you can remove the taste. Is that what I'm saying? It doesn't matter how much you eat, how you eat it, even you stand on your head and eat with your toes.
Like Indian apples. Indian apples.
Yes, it doesn't matter how many you eat. It's like
styrofoam.
That. Styrofoam. Wow, that's an improvement. It used to be sawdust.
Well, okay.
I guess it depends on whether it's fresher or not. Yeah. If it's fresher, it's styrofoam. Yeah. If it's a little older, it's sawdust. Okay. Yeah, previously we never got fresh enough to be styrofoam.
Okay. Moving forward.
Yes. So the whole point is, doesn't matter how much you eat, you'll never be satisfied. That the taste will be there. You know what I'm saying? There's some experience that you chew, there's some shape there, there's some feelings like that, or something, but you can't get a taste. So that's the problem, is that's called sense gratification. So if we give up the idea that I'm going to enjoy this, but if it's about its connection to Krishna, then the senses are working in connection to Krishna, therefore, then the one is enjoying. But it's not about enjoyment. Does that make sense? If you think about it, the points in time that one can remember that one was like really enjoying something, you're remembering the aparoksha position. Does that make sense? You're not remembering when you were remembering it. You're remembering when you weren't remembering it. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Like the door of no door or something. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, give an example. We're in the kirtan and really absorbed in the kirtan, but you're not thinking about how nice is the kirtan, you're just absorbed in the kirtan. So you're remembering that absorption. But afterwards, when you're talking to your friends, wow, this is great and fabulous, and remembering about it, that's not what you remember in the future. Does that make sense? So what does that mean? Is that so there's this idea is that I'm going to be enjoying it and I'm going to be aware of the enjoyment at the same time. I want my cake and I want to be able to eat it at the same time. But it doesn't exist. That's the illusion. That's not possible. Right? So therefore, when one is absorbed in Krishna, then the senses are engaged in all that, and it's a very pleasant experience. That's why we see Rupa Goswami is giving the whole science of prema bhakti and the experiences that they're having. Right? But it's not about it's not about the experiences of engaging the senses, it's about the interaction with Krishna. These come along with it. So in other words, the sensual perception that the transcendentalists appreciate is far greater than what we're appreciating. But that doesn't compare to the absorption in Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is because we don't have Krishna, we're simply looking at the engagement of the senses. But the transcendental platform, they're interacting with Krishna, who's the most wonderful person. And then, along with that, the senses are being engaged. Right? Because otherwise there's a thought, oh, if I'm giving up, then how will I enjoy? But the point is, anything you remember that you enjoy, it's not about your remembering, it's about remembering when you were not thinking about it and enjoying. Does that make sense? You know, so, interesting. Nowadays, even though it's thinking that, you know, it's improved, we're enjoying more, we have better and all that, they're actually enjoying less if we analyze it here. It's just like before. You got a nice, you know, let's say you're out somewhere, they bring you a nice meal, you appreciate it, the fragrance, you start to eat, you like this, and you're just like this. Now it's as soon as you get it, you have to take a picture and this and that, and then take a bite, and oh my God, like that. So the time that they're actually enjoying is actually shorter. The time they're talking about they're enjoying is much more. While before, they talk less, enjoy more.
That's a t-shirt. Talk less, enjoy more.
Yes.
Maharaj, can you say that sadhana bhakti is in the aparoksha, like ascending towards the descending?
Ascending towards the descending. Why not? It's just we're aware of the descending. Devotees are working within the descending process. And by conditioning, then they are still tend to approach it or look at it as if it is ascending. But it never is descending. It's never not descending. Everything is Krishna. So whether we appreciate that or not, it's not like the physicists in the university that somehow or another the material energy works differently there and it's not connected to Krishna. It's just that they're looking at it from their perspective. You know, it's just like someone with jaundice. Is everything not yellow? Yeah, so what has that got to do with, you know, that's an approach? It's just a matter of removing the yellow and then you see things properly. That makes sense.
When you say about Satchitananda, the chief potency, can we understand that first we need to establish the sat aspect?
Means we're working on that. That's sambandhigyan.
Yes.
But that, because then you're understanding what is Satchit and Ananda. But once you have that sambandhigyan, you have to apply it as chit, and therefore there's the Ananda.
But for example, to accept that Krishna is inconceivable, his potency.
Yes.
So it's a question of acceptance, faith.
Yes.
But this means if we don't accept that, we cannot go, we cannot be in touch with the chief potential.
But it's how are we coming in contact with that chit potency? Because we're unaware of it, right?
Yes.
So how do we actually come in contact so we're able to work with it?
Mainly by devotee.
Yes. Mainly, is there something else? Yes. A good croissant is, you know, like that.
It seems to often be false.
Yeah. It's just, I'm seeing a pattern here.
My projection is sensing something.
Yeah, so it's just by devotees, because devotees are in touch, therefore that's how we get in touch. So we're able to be engaged in devotional activity, even if we understand nothing. You know, like the guy that comes to the temple the first time, or meets devotees the first time, and then ends up, you know, it's a festival, ends up in the kitchen washing pots. Right? He doesn't understand what at all is going on, just as there's a lot of pots. These guys, like, they really...
Serious.
Yeah, serious amount of pots. Never seen that many pots in your life, right? And so, but because they're in touch with, by the devotees, they're being engaged in devotional service. That's the beauty of bhakti, is you can be engaged in it even if you don't understand it. And then by being engaged in it, you'll start to understand it. By understanding it, then you'll start to engage more. So by the grace of Krishna, one gets Guru. By the grace of Guru, one gets Krishna. So they go together. But the point is to, when you have the opportunity to learn these things and all, you shouldn't avoid. Right? Mm-hmm. Saying, oh, we don't need that. You just have to do service and all that. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of, yeah, the practical, but you have to know what you're doing. But it's not that you spend all your time just trying to know. Until you know, then you can't do. Mm-hmm. So the point, they go together.
So when a devotee is in Maya Maharaj, this means that there is no connection to chief potency.
It's definitely less. Definitely less. You know, there'll be a glimmer here and there when they start to understand that their ideas of how they're going to be happy in the material world are not really working. Then there's a doubt, and, you know, hey, there's cracks in their materialistic concepts that it doesn't seem to be working. Because they know too much.
Well, when it's about the chief potencies, very often we give two definitions of chief: knowledge and consciousness.
But unless you're conscious, how do you have knowledge?
Yes.
Right? And then knowledge is what you're going to use, but using something, you're conscious. Does that make sense? So you're conscious,
yes.
And then that means there's knowledge, then there's the application of the knowledge, there's like this. Yeah, so there's not a problem, they go together. You can understand that, because if he's taking Satchitananda, is basically the principle, the source of everything. Mm-hmm. That means all these varieties of connected points are all there.
Yes.
You know, like we were seeing in the rasa, from the one, another thing's connected. One, it may be the application of it, the result of it, and then that's coming from something before that generates it. From that, you get so many different anubhavas or satyagat bhavas. After that, they generate other vyavichari bhavas. You know what I'm saying? Which then become the basis for starting something else. So it's when we're analyzing things, we're just looking at things so that we're for understanding. But this idea is that you just have that understanding, that's enough. You have to actually be able to apply it. Right. Let's say you have a business person. They understand business. So if you give some knowledge within the context of the business, they themselves can see the manana, how to apply it. Like that. Does that make sense? But anybody else, someone who's not a businessman, they may not have knowledge. It doesn't mean that they'll be able to use it in business. Because it's until you've used it, you don't get the benefit. You know, like the scientist has all this knowledge, but he gets no benefit. He's understanding this or not, he gets paid the same. Right? But then the businessman or government takes his thing, and then they get profit from it. So that's the whole point. It's just the knowledge itself. Until it's applied, that's where you get the benefit. Like if I know a recipe in cooking, I don't get the benefit until I've cooked it. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's just like what do you call it? Looking at recipe books with all the pictures, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure that that must be one of the, you know, how you say, lower planets like that, where you're starving, and the Yamadut has come along with these amazing cookbooks that you can look at,
Chinese
but there's nothing
water
to
torture.
Eat, huh?
Chinese water torture, yeah, just yeah. with cookbooks.
Virtual yeah. reality. Hmm? Virtual reality.
Yes, yes. So those then you can't you know, it's a problem. You get more and more. Yes.
Maybe you even get to cook it, but you never get to taste it.
Or you get cooked in it.
Oh,
yeah,
you're at it.
Yes, yes. You like that preparation? Yeah, I love that. Okay, toss them
become
in.
The preparation.
Okay. Yeah, or you can cook it but can't eat it. And even if you do eat it, there's no taste.
Yeah.
Levels. Yeah, levels of, depending on how sinful you are. Just as the whole universe exists with you, Satmam, in your belly, the universe exists outside, also in you, right? It exists outside, also in you. It's inside your medium-sized form, because that medium-sized form is unlimited. It also exists outside his medium-sized form within him. In other words, everything is with him. That's the first verse of the Chaturshloki. He is everything. So that means everything's contained within him. Right? So that means he, as a medium-sized form, being unlimited, is the source of everything. So that means everything's within him. But then it also can be manifest outside him, but it's still within him.
Sri Supanishad also. Sri Supanishad also. First verse of Sri Supanishad.
Oh, yes, everything coming from him is complete because it's still within him. He's complete. So that's the point, is that it doesn't work with your standard logic. Because standard logic, it's based on a non-standard position. You know, it's not that's the standard way things work. Like, let's say you want to make a bed, right? You get a bed according to your size. Right? That's the standard how it works, right? But there was this one king somewhere, I don't remember where. He had this bed. And whoever came to the place, you know, if they were in trouble, they were fit to the bed. So if they were too small, they were stretched. If they were too big, they were, you know, shortened to proper size. So that's not standard. You know, one king used that. That's not your regular way. You know? Otherwise, you'd have a problem, right? You know, Danny DeVito and a California king, that would be a problem.
Yeah, I'd like not to go there.
Yes, yes. Does this make sense? No. If it doesn't, that's actually good. There's hope. The meaning is this: by showing himself in Braja and at the same time showing that Braja was within him, he showed that he was inside and outside Braja. His mother thought that perhaps this was a dream. Right? Because she and her rasa, you're not worried about these kind of things. Because the possession and all that faith in Krishna is so great that these things aren't necessary for the relationship. Right, so you see, Shanta. That's what the relationship's based on, is being able to appreciate these things, and just because it's unlimited, all these various aspects, then all the ways in which Krishna is appreciated. So any of these things could give rise to another aspect of appreciation, and in this way, they can unlimitedly go on appreciating Krishna. Right, through this knowledge. Like that. Or the servants then appreciating this, then they serve him because he's the supreme. Like that? Does that make sense? But we see with starting with the friendship, parental and conjugal, then these aspects aren't causes for bhakti. Does that make sense? Their rati with Krishna is not dependent upon his greatness or his being God. Right? Because he's God, but God is a person. So the faith is moved to that he's a person. And within that person, then he has his own what he likes to do. And then, being what he likes to do, then you have your particular faith that you want to do it in this particular way. Be involved in his life in a particular way. Yes?
Technically, the shift is happening within the Dasya, because the three levels of Dasya, first one is Palya, second one is Dasya, and third level is Lalya. The first one is God, the Krishna is our protector.
Okay.
Second one is we are his servants.
Okay.
The third one is like, no, we are protected by Krishna, like as the Yadus and others, Krishna's sons, children, they feel that Krishna
okay.
is taking care, he's loving and taking care of us.
Okay.
So from there the shift is.
So would you say Palya?
Palya, Dasya? Dasya and Lalya.
Lalya, okay.
So Yadavas always references that Lalya level then.
So therefore you have Lalya and then the Lali. No?
Maybe.
Because Krishna is the Lalya there, but then that makes them the Lali. He's the Lala, they're the Lali. No? No? Yeah. No. Kind of. Okay, so she thought perhaps it's a dream, because it's not important for her rati, these kind of things. Therefore, them coming up, they don't nourish her rati. Right? So it's not important for her.
Would it be even that it kind of breaks the rati?
With her, it doesn't. That's why she thinks it's a dream. In Dwarka, because there is the aspect of majesty, as soon as these things come up, they'll go into that mode of majesty and drop down to Dasya.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but yeah. So that's why.
So looking, for him, it's just a dream. Or there's something
yeah,
here, or
yeah.
you know, it's just like
weird, yeah.
you know, it's just like there's that in Nectar Devotion. We haven't come up to it yet, but it's explaining that Nanda Baba is there, and Yashoda Mai is there, and this is after Krishna went to Mathura. So then, Yashoda Mai is lamenting that Krishna's not here, and Nanda Baba is chastising, "You foolish woman, what are you talking about? He's standing right here." You know, so he's just, because he's so absorbed in Krishna, he just sees Krishna there. So it's just different forms of ecstatic emotion. So, you know, so it doesn't change their position like that. While you see in Dwarka, they'll go in and out of, if they're in the Hayathi rasas, they can go in and out of that based on the on reverence that's there. If the on reverence increases, it drops them to Dasya. Because Vaikuntha on reverence is the predominant, so the highest you get is Dasya. You don't even get into this Lalya Dasya, right? It'll just be Dasya Dasya or Palya Dasya, like that. And the Shantas, that's all you get there. Means it's not that he doesn't have, Lakshmi's there, but that's his part of him, non-different from him. So, was what I saw a dream, or is it an illusory creation by some devata? Right? So it's a dream, it's illusory, like that. Has this been manifested by bewilderment of my intelligence, or is it some natural power of my child? Like that. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:8:40. You know, but it's not that he's God, it's just, you know, it's just something there, he's having fun. She doubted it was a dream or deva's maya, consisting of an original and false form. She concluded with some power of her son. She thought as follows. Announcing, "I am all-pervading, even in this particular medium-sized human form, by the inconceivable Surup Shakti. You have shown your special quality of simultaneously having both features." This was her conclusion. Right, so they'll get to that, but it'll come to that conclusion without affecting their rati. It's just, it's still her son, and her son's just so special, he can do these things. Right? You know, so that's always there. The mothers have no problem if their son, you know, has special abilities. Right? Because it still remains that it's there. So you see in here, it doesn't affect like that. Does that make sense? That's the difference in Braj over Dwarka. Dwarka, it will affect. Then by Krishna's extending the Yoga Maya, it'll come back to their rasa. But in Vaikuntha, Yoga Maya never extends that way. Right? It's always you're in relationship with the Lord, and that even though He is God, that you feel you can have this relationship of servant. Because otherwise, you saw when Arjuna saw the universal form, he was so overwhelmed he couldn't see any relationship with the Lord, so he couldn't function. So that means there must be some Yoga Maya covering, even for the residents of Vaikuntha, to accept Him as the Supreme Lord. And therefore feel I can serve Him. Right? Because the jiva, how big is the jiva? God's unlimited. Where's the connection? So you still require the Yoga Maya for that, for rasa to work. Right?
In the words of Garbhumi, which mentioned that Krishna is Narayan, so even these words are actually covered by Yoga Maya. That is why they are able to mention this.
So even if they're, even if the thing is, it's not that because it's covered by Yoga Maya, but the actual truth is this. Because the point is that Krishna is the source of Narayan. No? That's what we said before. That he is not Narayan. He is Narayan, but he's not Narayan. So it's not that because it's covered, he is Narayan. If Garga Muni said it, he is Narayan because it's covered, then Mother Yashoda is in the illusion that he is her son. The point is his being Narayan, the feature, that's an extension of this feature. So he is Braja Krishna, is the original. Narayan is his extent, is his expansion. Yashoda took rope to bind him up, but the rope was not sufficient to tie him. She also saw in his gaping mouth the universe, and then, with a worried mind, recovering her affection for him as her son. Recovered her affection. 2730, Srimad Bhagavatam. Uddhiti, Srila Prabhupada. One day, Lord Krishna, as the naughty child, disturbed his mother Yashoda, and she began to tie up the child with ropes just to punish him. But no matter how much rope she used, she found it always insufficient. Thus, she became fatigued. But in the meantime, the Lord opened his mouth, and the affectionate mother saw within the mouth of her son all the universes situated together. The mother was astonished, but out of her deep affection for Krishna, she thought that the Almighty Godhead Narayan had kindly looked after her son just to protect him from all the continuous calamities happening to him. Because of her deep affection for Krishna, she could never think that her son was Narayan, the personality of Godhead himself. That is the action of Yoga Maya, the internal potency of the Supreme Lord, which acts to perfect all the pastimes of the Lord with his different types of devotees. Who could play such wonders without being God? Right, means he is God, but the point is the relationship with him, that's the original position. His position, exhibiting being God, that's not the main feature. You know, but because he is, all these things are done. So it's just a matter of the perspective you're seeing it from. Is Krishna first or is Narayan first? Just as the universe is within your belly and is outside here also, you are within the universe and spread over the universe as well. How can this happen except by Maya, a Shakti which covers the truth? It is not possible otherwise. Because we're seeing one, we're seeing the other, when he's actually both. Riti. Next, Lord Brahma cites his own experience of visualizing the various four-handed expansions of Krishna as the proof for him being Swayam Bhagavan. Anucheda 37. I, Brahma, also have realized this. Today, apart from you, the calves and cowherd boys and forms. Hiccups. Today, apart from you, the calves and coward boys in four-armed forms, you manifested. All that I saw of the material realm and the beings worshipping you was nothing but your maya. First you were alone, then you were all the calves and boys, then you become the four-armed forms in all the universes, which are worshipped by persons in all the universe, including me. Then you remained as the unlimited Brahman beyond anything else. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.18. Udriti, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Lord Brahma says, the universe you displayed within your belly and the universe displayed outside that you showed to your mother and all the unlimited universes passing in and out of the pores of your Karanadakshai form are all produced by your material energy and are therefore designated as Mayika. This I have already understood, but today I have realized the existence of thousands upon thousands of spiritual universes formed through your inconceivable powerful Swarup Shakti. That object exists independent of you in the thousands of universes. What object exists independent of you in the thousands of universes that you have shown to be today? I guess shown to me today, right? Nothing, for everything is emanating from you. You have shown me not the material nature of the thousands of universes, but their spiritual basis. How? First, you were alone. Then by your Shakti, you expanded as all the coward boys and calves of Raja. Then by Yoga Maya, you covered all the coward boys and calves and revealed the countless four-handed forms composed of your Swarup Shakti. What type of forms were these? These forms were worshipped by all conscious entities, from the blades of grass to all the Brahmas. Then you became all the universes of all the countless Brahmas. Then Yoga Maya, by your desire, covered all this and revealed the one form, Advayam, of the pure, perfect Brahman, with immeasurable, incomparable beauty. Joy. You heard perfect Brahman, and then you decided you were going to turn around and leave, right? Okay.
Incomparable beauty.
With immeasurable, incomparable beauty. For my benefit, you remain uncovered before my eyes, through the potency of Yoga Maya. Do you need a chair? Huh? You're good. I see. He'll be here soon. Enjoy it while you can. So, it's through his energies that all this is happening. So, that we're able to see all the different manifestations. It's all his Swarup Shakti and the various aspects in that. Whether it's the external, then that'll be the Mayika. Then you have the spiritual world. So what he was seeing is that all this is coming from the spiritual platform. Is that he's thinking he knows very well the material platform. When you show beyond that, the spiritual, which is the origin of that, that's then where Brahma will be impressed. Because otherwise, as the engineer of the universe, he knows everything in the universe. But now it's being shown what's the source of all that. Whatever is there is coming from. And he's only working with it because Krishna is the original cause. So that means Krishna is the original cause. Then his internal potency as the formal cause. Right? So that's what then is here. And that's your Yogamaya. But then that's all covered here. Then that's your Mayika. So then from that, then it all happens. Does that make sense? So he's able to see all this and see through. So Krishna is the cause of all causes. Because he's there, he's able to create the different aspects that are there. And then from those different aspects in the jivas, then they, under that illusion of maya, then think that they're manipulating and getting all these results. But actually, maya is covering them, and maya is then the ingredients that they manipulate, and then she gives the result based on the formal cause of the internal potency, right? Which is then based on Krishna. So therefore, the whole process is Krishna, but at the same time is separate from Krishna. It's his energies. So, right? Except for you not being illusory, did you not show me a display of your maya, mayatvam, concerning the universe? Yes. That was what you showed. to fools, this world appears external to you in your human form by your maya. This is the meaning. So everyone thinks this is all separate from Krishna, because that's what you get, is that, yes, I'm doing the devotional activities and all that, and then I have to be practical in life and do this and that, and that means then it's all separate from Krishna. This material world is there, and then there's Krishna. But the whole point is yes, it's outside Krishna, but it's also inside Krishna. So we're only seeing one aspect. So that's the illusion, is that this one aspect is the total picture. And so if we base our understanding of the Lord simply by on what's outside of Him, then we're not understanding how all this is within Him. Then we'll think it's separate from Him, and therefore it works according to how we say it should work, when in actuality it doesn't. Because like we were discussing before, the scientists are studying simply the laws that are going on that they see within their perception. It's not that they're coming up with the things. It means when they perceive it, they'll claim it's theirs, and now it becomes theirs, and now people use it. And as long as no one finds a fault in it, then it will be used. But as soon as a fault is found, then it will disappear. Right? So the difficulty is there, is that one has to understand is that that middle-sized form of Krishna, everything's within that. But at the same time, as through his mind, it's external to him also. Does that make sense? Because he does everything by his internal potency. So there is no difference. You don't get this. Then you start to see things properly. Because Brahma was thinking, I'm in control of this universe, and then here's Krishna.
Yes.
Let's see how it works. But he showed that everything's in him.
Yes.
So he wasn't seeing properly. He was saying, yes, there's there, and the universe is outside. But he didn't see they're within him also. Because if they're within him, then he's still in control. This idea, it's Krishna's created something, but he's still in control because it's still within him.
Yes.
So, makes sense. Yeah.
Now, if you his wife is very important to understand the approach of Brahman, that everything, Krishna is in everything.
Yes, yes.
But if we don't accept that,
yes, but we also have to.
Reality.
Yes, but we have to accept that this Brahman is coming from the personal form.
Yes, yes.
In other words, the personal form is the original.
Yes.
Then he is all-pervading.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That form is what is all-pervading.
Yes. Yes.
So he has that middle-sized form and still is all-pervading. So that means everything's out inside him. Everything's outside him and everything's inside him. So then you get the proper, that's where this Achintabhedavita Tattva comes up. Because there's that aspect, then there's his energies, his non-difference. So these three features, the Bhagavan is the original feature, these other two features are also there, but they're contained within Bhagavan. Even though, like that. So that means Bhagavan is all-pervading.
Yes, yes.
And at the same time, everything is going on by his energies. So the energies are coming from Bhagavan, from the person. And he's in control of them.
Yes.
Right? They don't control him. And so from that, then you'll get the features on Bhagavan and the interacting with the energies in Ananda, or interacting with Chit with the Paramatma, or interacting in Sat with the Brahman.
Yes.
So it's still Krishna and his energies. It's just what's manifest. Because if you're saying Sat, it's just the existence of them. Right? Chit is the interaction, the activities, the results that are gained. Like Paramatma, then it's the witness, the judge, the creator, maintainer, destroyer. So then you're seeing the interactions. Right? Mechanical, you know, as God. But then, as Bhagavan, then it's the personal. How he is a person is the source of all this. So when that's appreciated, then nothing separate from Krishna. So you can see the person in everything.
Yes.
Because everything's within him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? At the same time as he's outside of this, because as a person, he has his own personality. says. And he's the origin of all other personalities. So the universal form means all elements that are within this universe that we know, they're all features of himself. Right? Either in their natural form or in their distorted form. Does that make sense? You know, it's like on the camera, you have the form, and then they have these little apps, and you can do things, make your ears bigger, make your face longer, do all weird stuff. So that's all. That's just what that happens here. Your nose gets so long, then you become an elephant. You know.
Chit potency, is that related to internal potency or paramatma? I'm kind of a little bit hazy in that.
Yes.
Yes, good. Thank you.
means you have the features themselves, they have their natural, how they're interacting, but at the same time, is all these are the source of every other level. Mm. So you can look at it on one level, and it's in the same line as higher and lower, you mean previous expansions and later expansions. But it just depends. Certain ones of them you can use multiple levels together, and certain ones you don't. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because when you change the context, then you generally change the vocabulary.
Yeah.
So it means the same thing. You know, it's just like Satchitananda. Okay, so then you have Sandini Samvitladini. It's also meaning the same thing, but it means that is the anubhava. Means that these are then the effects that you get from the Krishna,
yeah,
and his interacting like that. But then you have Icha, Kriya, and Jnana. That will be the influence on.
Mm.
What is influencing? What is it about Krishna? Is about the, you know, what's going on there? These are what controls the things.
So could we say Satchitananda is Sambandha, Jnana, Kriya, Icha, Abhideya, Samvit, Sambandha, is brilliant?
Yes, you can, but at the same time, as each is also prayojana. That's what I'm saying, is they have these, it means,
yeah,
you're talking about everything's there. If you're saying sambandha abhideya and prayojana, everything's within that. It is everything, everything's within that. It's the same principle. Everything coming from Krishna, as in the Isha Upanishad, is complete in itself. Because Krishna's complete. Right? Because he's conscious, everything else is conscious. Because he's a person, everything's a person. Like that. Because it is non-different from him.
Yeah.
Right? But he is still an individual. But everything's within him. So the simultaneously oneness and difference, that's the important aspect. Is that? Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.